Good morning. You are correct. We have so much going on today. So it's a full moon in Scorpio. It is the cross-quarter holiday of Beltane, which is between the vernal equinox and the summer solstice. Most of you know it as May Day. And today we're going to give you a little precaution. So depending upon who's delivering your May Day basket, you might want to be extra careful with that. And I love, Dave, you were already talking about all the stars aligning right before we all were getting it here. So I think that's just great. Let's see what else. Open door art tour this weekend?
Yes, it begins today all over northwestern Wisconsin. We have the open doors to all types of studios for artists in the area. You can go online to Open Doors to see that, but it's an opportunity to go inside the workshops of a lot of our artists, and some cafes and other locations are hosting artists as well.
Yeah, because formerly known as the Earth Arts?
Correct.
Tour, and then Earth Arts kind of disbanded. And I love that name, Open Door, because it really is what it is, welcoming people in behind the scenes, getting to see their studios. A lot of it's at their homes where their studios are. And
a lot of it is inspired by getting out in nature and the plants we have around us, too. There's jewelers, painters, photographers, metal artists, all types of artists that we have in our communities.
All right. And so people go, everything seems to be online these days. Is that the best way for people to?
It is currently. There's maps at the various locations, I believe.
Oh, and is it the Visitor Center, Polk County Visitor Center, on the tour?
Yes.
So that'd be a great place to start. And they could, I imagine they would have all the information.
And it's self-guided. Stop at as many or as few as you would like. And it goes, I believe, Friday and Saturday.
Okay, great. Anything else we want to announce for the
May Day?
Yeah,
are we asking people to go put May baskets on their neighbors' houses?
Why not?
Yeah. Also, just look out your window. It's a magical time that's probably going to disappear in the next few days with the warm weather. Lots of trees are in bloom.
All of a sudden, I looked out my window and I couldn't see the easement anymore today. Like from yesterday to today, I'm like, wait, I can't see down that space anymore.
You should mention one thing.
Yeah.
The plant rant is brought to you by Baker Orchard.
Yeah, thank you, Baker Orchard. And it's our 8th year anniversary on June show.
Ooh.
So we're going to have a party. We don't really know what that looks like yet, but we always seem to kind of pull it off. Well, speaking of, our guest today is Sam Linder. He was on in January where we were ranting about Buckthorn. And so Sam is the librarian at Balsam Lake Library. Welcome, Sam.
Hello. Thank you so much. It's amazing to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. I'm so excited to have you on again. So in, I don't know what month it was, April, March, one of those, the book that we read was called The Change. And it kind of got Sam and I and Debbie inspired to have an interesting topic today.
Yes, bright spring weather, but a bit of a darker topic today.
I know, a little odd on Beltane, when we're, but you know, whatever. We do what we want.
It's true, and it's the perfect time of year to talk about. We're talking about.
So, we're talking about plants that, you know, we always talk about all the benefits of plants and how great they are, but be warned, because not all of them are friendly. And so some of them can be deadly, they can be narcotic, they can cause, you know, problems within our body. Even when you were here, we talked about buckthorn, we talked about how some of that could affect some digestive issues if you ingest those berries. And so in this book, The Change, there was a woman who was quite gifted in her use of horticulture, and both, you know, maybe disrupting people's yards or organized gardens might have got a little unruly. And a few people, you know, like the Chicago musical, he had it coming.
Yeah, all about toxic plants today.
Toxic plants.
And I guess for me, it's very important to lay out a warning at the start, which is that this is not a fear-mongering attempt. The vast majority of plants in the world will not harm you if used correctly. Some of them will. Some of them will harm you terribly if ingested, but it's simply a reminder for me to get to know our plant friends a little better.
Well, and the thing is, there's so many things that you have in your yard already or in your garden, and so don't be afraid. Like, you've been working with these plants already. I mean, most people think of the poinsettia, and people are concerned about their pets getting into things. But there's been, I mean, right now the hyacinths are blooming and they're beautiful and they smell great. Well, guess what? we think of things, you know, the wild parsnip and poison ivy and things that irritate our skin.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many benefits to a lot of plants too, so this is a foil to that as well. And we look in our medicine cabinets and our refrigerators, and a lot of that is plant-based, but to the other, swing the pendulum the other direction, and we have some really dangerous plants we get to talk about.
But however, today, like digitalis is used in heart medications. Mm-hmm. However, it is very poisonous, and if you just thought you were going to go out and eat some foxglove, which is digitalis, you're not going to have the same effect that the pharmaceutical that was made based on that plant is going to have on you. So it's really interesting that way, that it is, some things can be both. Mm-hmm. Both and.
In fact, correct. Many are. I was just reading about urushiol this morning, which is the active compound in poison ivy, as well as poison oak, poison sumac. They're all in the toxicodendron family. Are species of this around the world. Urushiol, gets on your skin when you get the sap of a broken poison ivy stem. About 50% of people are allergic to one of the formulations of it. It depends on how saturated the molecule is. We don't need to go into that. The point is, most of us have experienced poison ivy at some point. If you haven't, lucky you. Fantastic.
I'm in that boat.
Keep it up. But one of the reasons they first discovered it is because when urushiol is exposed to sunlight, it oxidizes into a black substance that forms a nearly non-reactive lacquer. And so the Japanese lacquer tree creates urushiol and makes some of the most beautiful, that black Japanese furniture that's so beautiful. A lot of that comes from the same compound of poison ivy.
Oh, isn't that interesting? So how do these people work with that material? Then there have to be, a lot of things, what I was reading, because even like clematis, no one ever thinks twice when they go prune their clematis, but clematis can be a very, an irritant, which I wasn't aware of before. And so these things, but anyway, toxicodendron, yes, the genus for poison ivy, but then a lot of the things when I was looking up more information was that, they just make sure to use gloves or be careful. But poison ivy is one of those crazy ones, because if you burn it, you can inhale it. And that, to me, would be my worst, in your lungs or something.
I have seen someone who accidentally threw a poison ivy vine-wrapped log onto a campfire.
Yeah,
And her eyes were so swollen, it took over a week for her to see again. So, it is. It's spooky. But that, to me, is why identification of plants is truly the superpower. If I can tangent for a moment. Amazing. I will rant for a second then. Are either of you familiar with the concept of the green wall?
No.
Okay, so it's kind of a nature education psychology concept. And the idea is, they've done a lot of studies on this, and I've seen it as an outdoor educator a lot. I was raised in Chicago. I'm a city kid. I apologize. I'm here now.
You're welcome.
Now I'm really transitioning. I just got home from Chicago on Wednesday Woo! Night, and I love that city. And talk about a beautiful place and the gardens and the sculpture. We'll talk about that after the show.
I can't wait.
I love Chicago.
I also love, it's my hometown. I love it. Absolutely. However, being raised there, there weren't a lot of plants or intact natural environments anywhere nearby. So when I would first go on camping trips, I would see the woods and I would just see a green wall. I had no ability to differentiate between the various pieces of the natural environment. And I think a lot of people being raised today, and a lot of even older people maybe, they're used to green lawns, city landscapes, etc., and who have not trained any sense of plant identification, see this kind of green wall. But then as soon as you start to teach some of the basic identification tools, it magically, it's like a magic eye, where you have to unfocus as a kid. And
kind
all of a sudden,
it breaks it down to the understory, the overstory, where you're seeing the components that make up the green wall.
Exactly. And then eventually, as you get better and better, now I can drive and I'm never bored. I should pay more attention, but just stay off the road with me. But yeah, I'll say, oh, look, ash tree, oak tree, You start to recognize these patterns and shape and leaves and et cetera. And it really becomes this power, you can never be bored once you've learned enough plant ID, because everywhere you go, you can pick up all of these different, it's this patterns, these intricate pieces around. And also it gives you the ability to tell, hey, that little three-leafed vine with mitten-looking leaves is a poison ivy. I'm not going to go tromping over there, right? Or, hey, look, a bunch of stinging nettle. Maybe I won't go in my running shorts and bust through that little patch of woods as I have done before. I really do think that, talking about toxic plants to me is motivation to learn about these amazing things around us, because so many of them can do wonderful things, so many of them can harm, a lot of them do both. I think stinging nettle, a lot of us are familiar with, Urtica genus.
But it's super good for you.
Amazing for you.
So good for you. Right now is the time we should all be detoxing from winter, and nettle is at its prime, and go out there and you boil it down or steep it or just soften it enough, and it is great for you.
A super green. I mean, it's incredible for you. Yeah. And not just eating, but I mean, there's a lot of cultures around the world that would actually hit themselves with the nettle.
Oh, my.
Because it raises blood to the surface, which actually can help with arthritis. And they've done studies on this. It helps with rheumatoid arthritis. And so there's lots of cultures where people would actually apply nettle to themselves. It stings for 10 minutes. It goes away.
So I just got diagnosed with carpal tunnel. Maybe I should try to get that nerve wide open.
I got you, friend. You let me know. I'll come over.
Weekend plans. Yeah.
But then on the other hand, you know, it's part of the some Ecuadorian indigenous justice systems that if you commit certain crimes, you get flogged with nettle on the streets for a while. So, I mean, it's both at the same time.
Yeah, it's not a pendulum. It's more an analogy might be wreath of plants. It's just some are good, some are bad, and some are both.
Mm-hmm. I think most have a lot of both in them. I'm thinking about some of the ones that I, you know, generally want to watch out for is mm-hmm. one of my thoughts in this when we talk about toxic plants. One of the big ones that's spreading a lot these days is a lot of the plants in the carrot or parsley family.
Yeah, like that wild parsnip. Mm-hmm. So it's got that yellow umbel at the top, and now it's kind of grown everywhere, and it looks a lot like valerian root, which isn't going to bother you, the difference being the color, but boy, people are really getting reactions to that, right? And it's super hard to get rid of, but it's a biennial, so if you can identify it properly and get the flowers off before it seeds, you can get rid of it that way. Is that correct, Sam?
Yeah, 100%. So it starts off with a rosette, a basal rosette. So it grows a little whorl of leaves around the ground in the first year.
And they're real lacy, fine and lacy.
Mm-hmm. Like all of the kind of parsley family, they've got that beautiful lace-like look to them, very highly bisected leaves. And then the second year, it's going to send up a big, juicy shoot, a bunch of leaves, and then that umbel. It's a beautiful umbrella-looking kind of yellow flower. But if you get that on your skin, it's phytotoxic.
That you're talking about, the juicy part.
Exactly.
It's going to be a problem.
That sap gets on you. It doesn't do anything until sunlight hits it. And then the UV rays excite electrons inside the molecule that jump up to a higher energy level and start to bubble and boil. And you can end up with huge, raging blisters. And if it's in your eyes, you can even go blind. Yeah. So, and
not
it's...
Not the eyes.
Yeah, right? Goggles on, everybody.
Well, people are spring cleaning and looking at their ditches, and it's common for people to not realize how dangerous some of the sap can be on these plants that aren't poison ivy.
Yeah. And this one's spreading rapidly, and it's kind of a new spreader. It wasn't. I mean, it escaped... Like so many things, it escaped cultivation, and now it's everywhere.
You can see it all over.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you recommend? I mean, you have experience with this, with, you know, like with the buckthorn eradication and that. So what's the best way? So you need to get out there and get those seed heads or the flowers off before they seed, so mm-hmm. they're not, you know, starting the new plant since it's biennial. But then what protective gear, what do you wear, or what do you, how... How do you go about doing that without injuring yourself?
This is a great question. Acronym IPM, Integrated Pest Management. Almost every invasive or pest plant needs to be dealt with, can be dealt with in a variety of ways, depending on what time of the plant's life cycle it's in. When it's a low basal rosette in the first year, the number one best thing you can do if you are willing to use chemicals is just a glyphosate treatment, okay. Roundup. I hate to recommend it.
Especially there, it's in ditches all the time, and then that we're going to be putting it directly into the water.
Yeah, but the science shows that it does not get into groundwater as far as they can tell. That being said, a lot of lawsuits about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma happening with glyphosate right now, and there being, you know, some ties possibly to dementia and Parkinson's. However, a lot of that is in people who are using it industrially. People who are using it on a garden scale at their home, you know, its exposure level highly correlates to issues down the line for most chemicals. The problem with so many of the parsnips is that they'll send down this long taproot.
Yeah, they have huge deep roots because it's in the carrot family.
Exactly.
So it's...
And it has a literal, I mean, it's wild parsnip. It has a beautiful white parsnip at the bottom. That's edible, but I wouldn't try that. they make a special shovel called the Parsnip Predator.
What?
Uh-huh. Yep.
A future sponsor, perhaps, of Plant Rant.
They might, actually.
We'll reach out to you later.
Mm-hmm. And it has a round handle for ergonomics, and then it's got kind of a funny-looking blade. It's a kind of chisel-shaped blade with a V-shaped indent at the front. So it comes down to kind of two points with a little crook in the middle. And if you get that down just about 2 inches below the soil's surface and nestle it up against the taproot and then kick it, it'll cut the taproot about 2 inches below the surface, which is often enough for the plant to not be able to grow back up past that.
Oh, interesting.
And so as far as protective gear goes, you're going to want good gloves, long sleeves, shirt tucked in to pants, and socks. You just don't want any exposed skin if this stuff's going to be flying around. The number one thing you probably don't want to do is take the weed whacker to it.
Oh, my gosh. And then what do you do with your clothes afterwards?
A simple wash is fine.
Okay, that will get rid of it.
Put them in the washing machine with decent detergent. Urushiol is tougher. That's the poison ivy ingredient. That's an oil that's really, it won't dissolve into a lot of typical substances. And so, but thankfully the parsnip hemlock toxin will easily go away in the wash.
And part of that you were saying too is because it responds to the light, to the light of the sun. So you're getting rid of it. It doesn't have the time to have that chemical reaction.
Exactly.
Hmm. And then poison ivy, I was like, it's, even when it's dormant, it can still affect you. Even when it's been dead, it can. So it's like, wow.
Yeah.
That is some power. I have been blessed. I have camped my whole life, and I had really sensitive skin as a kid. My mom couldn't even switch. Well, let's stick with laundry detergent for, you know, not getting into too much detail. But I would always get an irritation. Change anything, and I'd get an irritation. But all my life, I've been camping since an infant out in the woods, and I never, so I don't know if I just don't come in contact with it or if I'm one of those few people that doesn't react to it, but it's,
yeah,
I'm so grateful.
You're lucky.
And I mean, I'm not gonna experiment like, oh hey, I think I'll rub in some and see if this is true or not, but I've been really blessed because I've, yeah, seen some people that have had some horrible, and they got to go on prednisone and all this stuff.
I kissed my dog after a hike.
Oh no.
On my lips, it looked like a terrible Botox incident. Just poison ivy on my lips. So that's prednisone for me. So
there you go. I actually didn't react to poison ivy until last year.
Oh no way.
Yep. And that can happen because it's an immune response, right? It's not like other toxins where they're naturally triggered by the compound. It is that some of our immune systems go after the urushiol, and it's an immune response that causes the blisters, like any other allergy.
Oh.
So actually, even a Benadryl or a Zyrtec can help with the symptoms, because it is an allergy. It's not a different form of toxin. But yeah, so some of us develop that allergy later in life, like me, fun. I had wrists covered in blisters last year, and I was like, well, this hasn't happened before. How lovely. Important, we have one other member of the family that lives up here, which is poison sumac.
Yes.
Sumac, obviously, a lot of us know from the roadsides, growing with the staghorn sumac, those beautiful compound leaves, and then those red kind of spikes of flowers. Poison sumac will grow in lower swampy areas. It has the compound leaves. It grows as a shrub, but it'll have smooth margins of the leaf, edges of the leaf, rather than toothed. And its berries are these kind of nefarious-looking green-white.
Oh.
And that has lots of urushiol in it. So that's another one where if you're working, you know, down in a low-lying area of your property, you're like, oh, pretty sumac. Keep your eyes out for which one it is, because it can do the same thing.
And is it in the same genus? I mean, we use these common names, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's a relative, but it is.
Yep, it's a toxicodendron as well.
Okay.
Same thing with poison oak out west. On the west coast, there's a lot of poison oak, and it's the same toxicodendron.
Hmm. So the poison sumac is skin irritant.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yep, same urushiol as the poison ivy. So if you don't react to poison ivy, you won't react to poison sumac. But probably better not to test it out for most of us. And then speaking of the carrot family, I find it fascinating, the kind of parsley carrot family, home to some of our absolute favorite edible plants and home to some
Love
of the
parsley.
Most terrifying, deadly things that have ever graced the earth. we have growing here native poison hemlock and water hemlock. You'll often see Queen Anne's Lace wild carrot growing around. It's got beautiful lacy leaves, and then it has this white umbel on top.
It kind of turns into like a bird's nest look when it starts to dry. Everyone sees it, I'm sure, in the ditches.
Absolutely. I know a lot of foragers that love to dig up the roots and use those. It has a beautiful parsley scent to it. Poison hemlock looks a lot like it, but it's got a hairless stem. So a lot of people will say, because Queen Anne's Lace is one of the names of wild carrot, they say Queen Anne has hairy legs. Because Queen Anne's Lace, the wild carrot, has hair on the stem.
What a great to remember.
I don't know if she'd appreciate it, but that's probably not a problem right now. the poison hemlock will have a smooth stem and often mottled purple. And even 6 or 7 leaves of poison hemlock can kill an adult human. It is phenomenally toxic. Famously, Socrates was forced to drink, right? In his exile. Back in the ancient Greek days, I believe it was Socrates. People have known about these for ages, and they grow out here. And that's one of my big cautions for anyone getting into the foraging world. One time, I've told this story a lot, but I was living in Portland, Oregon for a little while, and I saw a gentleman in a parking lot collecting fresh green tips from an evergreen tree. And I walked up because I knew what that tree was. And I was like, what you doing, pal? And he's like, oh, I'm collecting spruce tips. I saw this on TikTok.
Oh no.
I've heard that you can, you know, soak spruce tips in a, you make a bunch of cool stuff with them. You soak them in beer to give it a fresh flavor. You can ferment them. All of these things are true if they're spruce tips. If, however, it's a Pacific yew tree, then that's going to have really, really bad effects because that's a highly toxic tree. It looks a lot like a spruce if you're not familiar with your ID. So again, not to fearmonger, but having taught a lot of people how to forage, foraging is amazing. It is a life-changing way to enjoy the world more, get beautiful benefits from the healthy aspects of native plants. It saves you money. It makes you look cool. But if you do not know 100% what you are eating, then you should not be picking and eating that thing. And so while you're getting into it, make sure you have an expert around, someone that really does know their stuff. And learning some basic plant ID can be super, super helpful on that front as well.
And I'm going to remind people, too, so Tana Worrell's been on multiple times. I think she might have been part of my last year's anniversary celebration, but so she should still be in our archives. But Tana Worrell, she goes by the Friendly Forager, and she does things right on her property. She does different walks. Lisa Kofakis, the Creekside Crone, would also be a good person to reach out with. So we do have local experts.
Herbal Safari medicinal
Sylvia
plants.
correct
Herbal she's a neighbor as well. She'll do pasture walks and show you medicinal local plants, so
and you can get more information. All of those three of those people we mentioned are in the archives on the wpcradio.com on the or .org on the Plant Rant archives. So we do have local experts in our area.
And go to your library. People. Lots of books.
Mm-hmm. And all the libraries around here can get you books from a huge system. We have over 1.4 million titles available.
That more library system is great.
Huge shout out. It's incredible. It's an incredible resource. We also have one of the densest collections of public libraries for a community this size in Polk County, anywhere in the States.
Yep. Oh, wow. Aren't we lucky?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Deer Park is the smallest municipality with a library, at least in Wisconsin.
They have a lovely native garden right outside their library as well.
They do. It's beautiful. They do amazing work there.
Mm-hmm. So there was a plant in The Change. And what's the author of that? Do you remember?
Oh, I forgot.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Never mind.
Calling me out as the librarian.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry.
Well, there's a lot of information today.
Yeah.
So.
But one of the plants, was it Dutch broom?
Scotch broom.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about the Dutch people. Anyway, so Scotch broom, and you seem to be familiar with that, and that was a plant that I was not familiar with. Was that the one that she would put in people's yards that spread out, was spreading a lot, kind of took over? And
yeah, 100%. So we thankfully aren't dealing with it here. I saw a lot of it in Portland on the West Coast. It likes a milder winter. And it was spreading invasively in a massive way out there. If you're familiar with Eurasian honeysuckle out here, it's one of the big invasive shrubs.
Yes, yeah.
It has kind of a similar habit. It likes it a little more exposed, but it grows to, you know, a 10-foot tall shrub. And it puts out these bean pods that look just like a beautiful old green bean.
Oh.
And my experience with that was I was teaching a group of students out there. We had kindergarten students. And, you know, we were giving them a foraging talk.
Oh, boy.
And the number one rule we gave them at the start and in the middle and at the end was you don't put anything in your mouth without okaying it with a teacher first.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a student who was a very willful and independent young man who, as soon as I said that, looked me directly in the eyes, reached out, grabbed a bean, and shoved it in his mouth.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so I called my boss, and I'm like, what should I do? And he's like, why don't you read the symptoms of Scotch broom poisoning to him?
Oh.
I think that should fix the problem. Oh. I won't vouch for that method personally. But yeah, it can cause really serious stomach upset, even bleeding and ulcers through the digestive system, which is another testament to kind of the range of toxins that can happen and kind of the different systems that they can affect. Obviously, digitalis, foxglove, another one that doesn't grow here outside of gardens. It likes a little bit of a milder climate, typically. But that has a toxin in it that can speed your heart rate up, which, again, can be used for a medicine if titrated correctly. But in the amount that you would find in a beautiful flower that a three-year-old might eat would be way too much. You get things that affect your gut. I don't know. It's just Plant Rant, so I don't know if we can go into the fungi kingdom.
Of course, there's a whole lot of
wild stuff over there on this front. Though only, you know, of the thousands of species of mushrooms, there's only a handful that will cause you very serious harm. A lot of them will just give you gut upset. But one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot recently is the stories. A lot of folks in California over the last few months have been getting Amanita poisoning from death cap mushrooms because they look so similar to mushrooms that are found native in parts of Southeast Asia and Mexico. So immigrants are moving to these communities. And foraging mushrooms is a huge part of a lot of communities. We have a fear of it here.
I was going to say, I feel like most people here, they're more afraid of a mushroom. They're not as, they think, have more of this idea that the plants are safe, but the mushrooms are bad, when there aren't really that many, you know, deadly ones, but it helps to know which ones are which to avoid, you know. But people seem to be more afraid. You know, there's the morale and the false morale, but that seems common. Mm-hmm. For folks to be fearful of the mushroom.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to make you afraid of plants. Let's reiterate that one more time.
But. We're having fun and sharing information. And there's a bit of the kind of macabre thrill to it, certainly. And it's like, hey, I've lived this long and haven't had this happen to me. How awesome.
Yes. Celebrating life, yes.
Exactly. But no, the kind of fungophobia, the fear of mushrooms, is fascinating. I've read a little bit that it's stems a lot from English culture. Like the British Isles are a place that don't have a really strong mushroom foraging culture, as opposed to other places like Russia, for instance, where mushroom foraging is a huge, everyone on the weekends is going out to forage mushrooms in Russia. In England, it's kind of more poo-pooed. And so I think a lot of that culture came over to the States and this fear of mushrooms. You know, there's a few basic rules that you can use with mushrooms that will help you avoid any type of problem. The number one is just, again, don't eat it unless you have someone that you know really well point it out to you. There are a few mushrooms you can learn, like oysters and chanterelles, chicken of the woods, that have either, you know, with a couple of key components.
Pheasant back, right? So yep. Those are really yummy.
Yeah, and they don't really have any, you know, bad analogs. There's no lookalikes that are a problem. My number one rule is, if it's a white mushroom with white gills, just don't touch it.
Right.
Because there's, you know, hundreds of them that look very similar.
And gills are on the underside of the mushroom is how you're going to notice the little segments, little lines.
Totally. And, you know, that's the problem with the Amanitas, is that they look so much like so many other mushrooms. Same thing with, they call them LBMs, little brown mushrooms. There's hundreds of them. Some of them kill you. Some of them are amazing. Just don't go for them. Just look at them. Say hi, buddy.
My grandma used to just eat mushrooms right out of the boulevard, right in St. Paul, you know?
What?
Oh, yeah. Little buttons grow right out in the boulevard. So, okay, you mentioned English, and I discovered we need a plant rant field trip to the northeastern part of England. There's a place called the Alnwick Garden, and they have a section that's called the Poison Garden.
Ooh.
And it says, do you dare to enter? So the Alnwick Garden plays host to the small but deadly Poison Garden, filled exclusively with around 100 toxic, intoxicating, and narcotic plants. The boundaries of the Poison Garden are kept behind black iron gates, open on guided tours. Only open on guided tours. Visitors are strictly prohibited from smelling, touching, or tasting any plant. I think it sounds amazing, and I really want to go there, but I love that you actually have to have the tour. It looks like it only costs £1 to get in, which, you know, in addition to your admission. But yeah, the UK's deadliest garden.
How cool is that?
I know. This is great. And then it starts, you know, kind of gives a list of things that, and like common plants that we have in our gardens, helleborus, monkshood, poppies. I mean, those are all things that you can go right to the garden center today and pick them up. But I think this sounds amazing. And then they have, you know, they kind of have marketed, then they have some, you know, Poison Garden playing cards that have the different plants on them, so you get to learn different plants that way. They actually have a distillery, it looks like, where they're distilling some of their own gin, and so they have a Poison Garden rhubarb vodka. Speaking of rhubarb, the leaf is toxic, the stem is not.
There,
so here's the thing we use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought this place looked so fun, and they had some really interesting books on poisonous plants, and it looks like a great place. So when we go to the UK,
WPCA.
Yeah.
Thanks for funding us.
Yeah. Well, no, we need that Parsnip Predator sponsorship.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, my goodness.
That would be so cool. Yeah, and a testament to the kind of cultural, the intrigue around it. I mean, intoxication is another thing we haven't really talked about, but a lot of plants out there that can make you take on a different mindset, whether you like it or not.
Mm. Well, like morning glory seeds, you know, you'll have a nice hallucination before you die. Well, and people, there was, you know, so the Stillwater Prison had a greenhouse there, and the inmates were able to go grow plants and things, but they were growing these passion vines, and then they were discovering that they were misusing them, though, so they were...
Fascinating.
Yeah, so, you know.
Or I remember reading the autobiography of Malcolm X, and he mentions how in prison, in order to get inebriated, they would put like 2 tablespoons of ground nutmeg into a glass of water, swirl it up, and you drink it, and it has a serious intoxicating effect. Huh. The way he described it was, he said it had the hit of 4 doobies. But the hangover of 100 shots is the way he describes it effectively. So I would not recommend, kids, that you get into the nutmeg jar. But it's, I mean, an innocuous thing we use all the time. And here it has a property that, you know, we don't experience in our typical cooking.
Right. Well, we've done it again. And Sam, thank you. I know we could, well, you'll just maybe want to come to the anniversary party. But yeah, so thank you, Baker Orchard. And I hope this was fun, informative, and entertaining for our listeners. Happy May Day, happy Beltane.
Happy May Day.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.